Good afternoon. Welcome to the Fathers Families Healthy Communities Forum, presented by Fathers Family Healthy Communities. I'm Saquon Lawrence, Director of Fathers Family Healthy Communities Demonstration Project and co-moderator.
And I'm Dr. Kirk Harris, Senior Advisor for Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities and co-moderator with my brother Saquon Lawrence.
FFFC is a demonstration project committed to engaging African-American non-custodial fathers to their children financially, socially, and emotionally so that African-American children will realize better outcomes and possibilities. So for the next few weeks, we will present Fathers Family Healthy Community social marketing campaign called the New Man Project, which is an exploration and promotion of what works when it comes to rebuilding the black family. We want to reimagine the role and image of black men and fathers and work towards a successful campaign for black male achievement. In addition, we'll lift up examples of affirmative black fatherhood, male-female relationships, and effective parenting. Among the topics we're covering, the responsible fatherhood field and definitions of manhood, rites of passage and mentoring programs for black youth. And Susan Taylor was on last week and did a fantastic job talking about the National CARES mentoring movement here in Chicago. And Dr. Karinga, Marlana Karinga, the week before. Was it the week before or maybe the week before?
Yeah, it was about 2 weeks. Yeah, yeah.
Talked about rites of passage programs and their need. We're also going to be talking about effective black leadership and the role of fathers. We believe we have an effective black leader in the studio today. So it's going to be a really interesting conversation.
Absolutely.
Also, we're going to be talking about, or we've had, actually, black womenists who are allies of Fathers Family Healthy Communities, organizations like Women in Fatherhood. We're going to talk about effective approaches to addressing health disparities, between the black community and the larger society. We're also going to be looking at examples of strong black families, and I think we've done that already as well. Father's role in educating the black child in the 21st century is also an area we want to explore. We also want to look at effective community-based organizations in the black community, both locally and nationally. And we want to take a look at how we should check and challenge the media's image of black men and fathers and the stereotypical depiction of black men and boys. We also want to explore the legal and personal responsibilities related to financial support of children. And lastly, we want to have a conversation about the effective workforce development and sector-driven job training activity in Chicago. And that's this afternoon's theme, so we're really excited about that. So as you can tell, Fathers Family Healthy Communities New Man Project is interested in what's good about the black family and community. So let's talk about fathers as assets. Let's examine our youth as a group with enormous capacity and possibility. Let's lift up the black woman as heroic placemakers in our communities and society. Let's reintroduce ourselves to our culture and have a dialogue about its central role in our rescue and reassertion in society in the world. So what this means is that FFHC is challenging ourselves and community to dispense with debilitating talk which overemphasizes how bad our communities are, our fathers, our politicians, our leaders, how bad our schools and families are, and then instead promote solutions, examples of excellence, and the best of what it means to be African and American and human in the world. And so, in keeping with that, we have with us this afternoon my friend and sister, Karen Norrington Reeves, and we're really glad to have her in the studio with us Sunday. And we know Sunday is not necessarily easy for our guests, so we're always appreciative when they come in. Karen Norrington Reeves is the Chief Executive Officer of the Chicago Cook Workforce Partnership, a nonprofit agency formed under the leadership of Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel and Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle in July of 2012 to reform and revitalize the public workforce system in the greater Chicagoland area. The partnership serves as the administrative agency of more than $50 million in Workforce Investment Act funds for both the city and the county, and also offers a host of other workforce initiatives. Karen began her career as a corps member of the National Nonprofit Education Reform Organization, Teach for America, in Compton, California. She served as an elementary school teacher. I didn't know that. An elementary school teacher, and in addition to traditional subjects, Karen taught Spanish. I did know this. Taught Spanish-speaking students to read and write in their native language. Karen has significant advocacy experience in the fields of public utility consumer protection, health law, and education. Karen Norton Rees received her law degree from Southern Methodist University School of Law in Dallas, Texas, and her undergraduate degree in Spanish language and literature from Northwestern University in Evanston. And I know people, when they think about Karen, they don't think about the fact that she has an undergraduate degree
right.
in Spanish language
right.
from Northwestern. She serves on the board of LISC Chicago and is a mentor sponsor with Link Unlimited. She currently resides in Chicago and is an active member of her community. Pam on the earlier show had this young man in there in the studio with her, and that was her son Alex, who's still with us, hanging out with us today. So we have a lot to talk about. Let's get right to it. So, Karen, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, welcome, Karen. It's a pleasure to have you. And,
Thank you.
Alex.
Right.
He was thrilled to be here.
Yeah. So let's just get right to it. So what is the nature of the partnership between the city and the county? As far as we know, this has never happened before.
So it certainly not happened before in Chicago and Cook County. It was done on a much smaller scale in Pittsburgh in an area called the Three Rivers area. But basically what happened here was that President Preckwinkle and Mayor Emanuel commissioned the establishment of a joint committee on city-county collaboration. Mm-hmm. And through that, the committee looked at about 51 different areas of potential collaboration between the city and the county, focusing on streamlining resources, being able to save dollars for our residents, for the constituents throughout the region, and really figuring out how can we be more effective in mm-hmm. delivering services. So the committee came back with recommendations in 51 different areas. I'm sorry, they looked at 51 areas, and they came back with recommendations in 19, one of which was in workforce development. So prior to last July, we had a workforce investment administrative agency for South and West Suburban Cook County that was under President Preckwinkle and prior to that President Stroger's leadership. Then we had the city of Chicago had its own workforce administration, and then Northern Cook County had its own workforce administration as well. Mm-hmm. And so the inefficient thing about that was if you lived, let's say, in the Austin community, the closest mm-hmm. workforce center to you was in Maywood, but you couldn't go to the Maywood Center because you lived in the city. Mm. And so through this collaboration effort, we have erased all of those fictitious boundary lines and allowed people to get services all throughout the region in the center that's closest to them and that makes the most sense. Mm. And even, I think, as we talk a little further, Saquon, one of the other things that really, I think, is significant about this is that we only had some very specific training programs mm. available in the city, and now we've made those available all throughout the county.
Mm. Yeah. And I know I used to work at the Mayor's Office of Workforce Development, mm-hmm. and I was there right when it transitioned from MET to MOWD.
Yeah,
and it was DFSS, and it's just, well, anyway. So I think this is exciting. Can you give us the top two or three objectives, though? What do you want to achieve? What's at the top of your list?
So there's some key things. First, we've got to implement workforce initiatives that provide people with what we call a credential of value. So this means a certificate or a degree that is industry recognized and actually opens doors to a career path that gives people family-sustaining wages. Mm-hmm. That is what's most important. We manage a variety of programs, not just the federal dollars, but we get state funds and other program funds to manage a broad array of initiatives. But mm-hmm. it doesn't matter. You can train people all day long, but if they don't receive a credential or something that is recognized within an industry or something that is mm-hmm. of value to a company, then all that training goes to waste. The second thing that's really important for us is engaging with the business community. So again, we can train people all day long, but if they don't have a job awaiting them at the end of that training, or if they're not better positioned to right. access a job, then again, we have wasted time and frustrated people and wasted money and resources. And then finally, I think true to the name, the Chicago Cook Workforce Partnership, our other objective is to bring together a variety of partners, whether that's state, federal, local, to have a broader and deeper impact with respect to occupational training and job mm-hmm. placement.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is exciting. I mean,
right.
this is relatively new. So how would you explain to our audience, though, sector? You and I talk about this is shop talk for us, but I'm not sure that, and I'm going to talk a little bit about this later, sector and demand side workforce development and how you engage, how your agency engages in this.
Right. So the demand-driven piece is something that was critical to the mayor. It was something that he really pushed in terms of the framework that we created for ourselves. Mm-hmm. And demand-driven basically means that you are supplying the businesses in this region with the workforce that they need in order to meet their particular objectives. So, for example, why would we train 1,000 horse and buggy drivers if we only have a demand for 50 horse and buggy drivers in the region? Mm-hmm. If you train folks, then you're wasting the money because the job doesn't really exist for them to fall into. Mm-hmm. So demand-driven means that you have to spend time analyzing data, figuring out where the jobs are, where they're going to be in the next couple of years, and then creating training programs that prepare people for those jobs, and then finally, on the back end, connecting those trained individuals to the employers that need those positions filled.
Right. And is there emphasis on, and I know the answer to this, but I want people to hear you speak to this, on wages, benefits, career tracks, when you do that analysis?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. So we look at where do we currently have vacancies, what is projected within the labor market, and then our focus has been on ensuring that we're putting people on career paths, not just into a job. Mm-hmm. We want to make sure that folks understand what the entry-level wage looks like, the mid-level wage, and then a more experienced wage earner within that occupation so that you can begin to look ahead and not just kind of do this short-term planning, which is what a lot of us do. You get prepared for the job for right now without thinking about the job of the future and understanding how the position that you enter into now will evolve. And so that's what we focus on as we're beginning to advise folks and put them into different training initiatives. It's something that's been a big push within my senior leadership, and we're beginning to roll out efforts with respect to all of the agencies that we help to fund to ensure that when people come in to receive services, they're being counseled around career paths and not just that short-term, quick-hit job of today.
Yeah, I know some of your staff. I hired a lot of them, so they're good.
I have a fabulous team. I want to give them a big shout-out this morning, afternoon, rather, if they're listening.
Yeah.
I really do have a fantastic group of people who are committed and passionate about workforce development, and quite frankly, have been doing it for a number of years.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, it seems like that there's a set of complexities to doing that, right? You got to analyze the market. Then you got to figure out where, you know, where the jobs are and where the ones that are going to be on mobility paths, right? It means that it's not just about that job, it's about future jobs.
Right.
And then you got to build those relationships with the employer that's going to make it all work. So it sounds like you got to have a really strong staff in order to facilitate all that.
We do. So I have a team in my strategic initiatives and policy unit that analyze labor market information. They actually write grants to help create new initiatives for us that help take us away from such a significant reliance on federal dollars. Then we've also got a business relations and economic development team that really focuses on connecting to the business community and ensuring that we are able to meet their particular needs and that they come to see us as an HR resource and a pipeline of talented individuals to meet their labor demands. So you're right, we've got to have a really broad focus and be able to drill down in those pieces that are most critical to just the overall success of workforce development within the region.
And so for folks who want to know more about what you're doing, they have questions, where should they go?
They can visit our website at workforceboard.org. That's all one word, workforceboard.org. Or they can give us a call at 312-603-0200.
Okay, good. And so what are the primary sectors and occupations you've targeted and why?
So our focus is on seven industries that are relevant to this particular region that we know are high growth, high demand. So they're business and professional services, healthcare, hospitality, IT or information technology, manufacturing, retail, and transportation, distribution, and logistics, or shorthand TDL. Mm-hmm. So these are the industries where we know, based on the data that we have, mm-hmm. based on current job postings and hiring trends, that there's a lot of movement and a lot of demand for individuals to fill positions there. Another thing that we do is we've got sector centers. So we mm-hmm. have 10 workforce centers. I don't know if we mentioned that yet, Saquon. Mm-hmm. We have 10 workforce centers and 2 satellite centers within the Chicagoland area, all of Cook County. And then we also are over 49 delegate agencies that fall under our umbrella and receive funding through the Workforce Investment Act. So prior to our collaboration launching last July, there were two sector centers, and those were only in the city of Chicago. Mm-hmm. And in the fall, last fall, we were able to fund 2 additional sector centers for a total of 4, and they're all now available for all residents of Cook County and the city of Chicago. Our sector centers focus on manufacturing, IT, and hospitality.
Okay. That's good. So I know Kirk has a couple of questions, but I have one other question. So what do we need to do? You and I have had this conversation before, and you know my views on this, but what do we need to do as a city and county to make sure our workforce system is working properly? I mean, you can't do this alone, and that's been my refrain when I talk to folks, when I talk about Karen's work and the emergence of this new agency, is that it's got to be all hands on deck. You know, Karen can't do this by herself, so.
So it's a lot of work, and, you know, believe me, it's not just me out there. There have been folks in this for a long, long time, and luckily a lot of them are on my staff. But what we really need is a deeper understanding of what it takes to be employable. Mm-hmm. So when we have these conversations about the brothers who are coming out of jail, and we have the conversations about our youth out on the street, and we start talking about, oh, all they need is a job. It's not that simple. People have to be trained to take the jobs. And here's another thing that we're dealing with is the long-term unemployed. Mm-hmm. So if you've been on a job for 15, 20 years, you're suddenly laid off, and now you want to re-enter the workplace, the interviewing process has changed since you were interviewing. The hiring process altogether has changed. Mm-hmm. Most of our applications now are what? Online.
Yeah.
And they have, you know, a series of questions. And if you get one question wrong, if you answer no to a question you should have answered yes to or vice versa, mm-hmm. your application is absolutely kicked out of that system and you're no longer a viable candidate. So we've got to have, you know, a re-education process around what it means to conduct an effective job mm-hmm. search. So that's one thing. The other is we need more funding so that we mm-hmm. can serve more people. Through the public workforce system here, we serve about 140,000 people a year. The demand is probably greater. So when you look at the labor statistics, talking about the people who just check out of the workforce mm-hmm. altogether, stop mm-hmm. searching for a job because of their frustrations, there are far more people that need to be served than we can possibly touch.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is really the business support. We need business support, whether it's small, medium, or large. Businesses have to commit to hiring from the public workforce system.
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of what past perceptions have been, regardless of what their interactions have been, or quite frankly, the lack of interaction, because only about 13% of businesses in this country actually even rely upon the local workforce investment board to source, mm-hmm. To source for the positions that they have. So we really need that long-term commitment from businesses in order to ensure that we're having a steady pipeline so that individuals who get the training can go in and fill the positions. The other thing I think we really need to have a dialogue about mm-hmm. is this issue around the unemployment rate. So we have this discussion here, and people can run around and spout what the local employment rate is as compared to the national average. But that doesn't even begin to tell the full story.
Mm-hmm.
You layer in race, you layer in gender, you add in age, you add in community, the rate increases exponentially. So mm-hmm. being African American and being over 40, either of those is a toxic combination in the search for employment. And being unemployed longer than 6 months, if that shows up on a resume, there's study after study after study that has come out to show that the longer you're unemployed, the less likely an employer is to even take a look at you.
Well, we have a couple of more. Go ahead, Kirk.
Yeah, so I was going to I'm going to build off of that, Karen, because I think those issues really speak to then what are some of the institutional responses, right, that we have to contemplate, that we have to think about in that context. And I know, like Saquon, that you've been thinking about these the notion of anchor institution, cooperatively owned worker co-ops, and ownership as a as mechanisms. And so let's maybe you can give us a sense of where you think these leverage points might be in the context of these institutions. And I know Saquon had been thinking about this work aggressively as well in the Chicago market, and what we might do in that regard to facilitate these outcomes, these better outcomes for our community.
So I know that was thrown at me. Saquon, you want to talk a little bit more and lay some foundation around the cooperatives? I can talk about it.
Yeah, well, I'm going to talk about it in the next segment extensively.
So maybe you can focus more on the institutional rather than worker-owned.
Yeah, the anchor institutions. That's something that I know you have some views on.
So I think the anchor institutions clearly have to be our colleges and our businesses, and quite frankly, our foundation community as well, because all of this stuff requires startup money. It's one thing to say that you're going to create an initiative that enables the workers to actually own the business and own a piece of the business, but you've got to have a product that they're going to market, and you've got to have some infrastructure for that business first and foremost. And then you got to train the folks around operating that business from soup to nuts. So I had a friend of mine talk to me recently about starting a lawn care company. And this is something we've talked about it for a long time in the Chatham community where I reside. And everybody thinks it sounds like a great idea, but it's all of the pieces together. And so this friend of mine says, yeah, you know, we could train the kids and train them with respect to mowing the lawns and taking care of the yard and everything. I said, right, but are you going to teach them how to market? Are you going to teach them how to run the business? Are you going to teach them about costs and about supply and demand and about the making sound purchases and really investing those dollars? So when we talk about creating those cooperatives, there's a whole level of education that has to go in. It's not as simple as, all right, I got these 50 folks who want to go to work. It's what are the roles they're going to play, and are we educating them literally from the top to the bottom about what it takes to own and operate that business? And then do we have a market that we can sell this product to?
Right, because they got to make money.
Yeah, and I guess the other thing is that so these anchor institutions, in some ways, what you're saying, if we think about our educational institutions and those kind of things, that they not only have to teach people how to be employees, they have to teach people to think about how to be employers.
Exactly.
And that is a different contextual, right? That's a different approach.
It's a great way to put it.
You need to be both, right? You need to think both ways, because we're living in a global society in which that's really required almost.
You're absolutely right. Absolutely right.
We got one other question for you, Karen, but before that, I think, and I'm going to talk a little bit about this, I think, in the next segment, but the anchor institution, the idea, and we go to Cleveland, right, and you go and study the Evergreen. So it really is about these institutions will have proximity to inner cities, right? And so in the case of Cleveland, there's these universities and medical centers, right? And so the pipeline, the procurement pipeline, becomes a way that the businesses that are formed are generating their revenue. So it's a really interesting model. I'm going to talk more about that
later.
But
the other piece is that you have foundations and you have leadership
that
value that community and recognize that there are contributions to be made. And so they've decided to partner with the community. And then the other thing is, you know, lending institutions that can help with the seed capital.
Right.
Yeah, so let me ask a question, and this is concerning the population that we focus on, Karen, and that is low-income non-custodial fathers, and really trying to see how we might position them to be more financially capable to support their children. How can we ensure our members are, that is the FFHC members, are accessing high-performing job development and placement agencies? Because it seems like not all agencies are created equal.
That's true, and not all agencies have equal resources from which to begin. So I would say the first place to start is with a workforce center, one of the standalone workforce centers, because the centers have comprehensive services. So it's not just you walk in and, hey, give me a job. I would say one of the big challenges is that folks walk in and they have to actually jump through a few hurdles before they get to that job placement point. And there's a reason for that. It's one thing to say you want a job. It's another thing to really have some intrinsic motivation to stick through the process in order to actually obtain that job. Right. And so we don't have a public rating system, if you will, for the agencies that we deal with. We are definitely measuring the performance of the training providers, and we have a website that does that. It's ChicagolandWIA.com. Again, ChicagolandWIA.com. And so that really allows folks to give feedback with respect to their experience with a training provider. We do our own internal assessment of our delegate agencies to see where they are with respect to their performance. But I would say the first place really to start is with the workforce centers. And one of the challenges is that people walk in and just believe, you know, I'm going to get a job. I got an email this week from a lady who, we need to transition.
Yeah, in a minute, you can wrap up.
Okay, so I got an email from a lady earlier this week saying that she went to one of the workforce centers and she had to go through three workshops before she was even able to begin kind of the job placement piece. And her initial response was that she resented it. She'd been in the workplace for a long time. After she went through the workshop, she learned so much that made her a better candidate that she was grateful for that opportunity. Mm-hmm. So the first thing I would say to folks is understand that this is a new day and age in terms of securing a job, and you need to be willing to listen to folks coach you through what the new process looks like.
Well, let me just say we're just about out of time for this segment, and we'll be returning from the break, and we'll be talking to Saquon Lawrence about his ideas and innovations around business development and workforce development strategies. I know we have a caller who's interested in talking about issues related to formerly incarcerated individuals, so maybe we can have some commentary about that as we come back. I don't know that we'll have time to take calls at this point, but we can at least respond to that issue that it sounds like the caller has, and we'll be back with you after the break.
Talk of Chicago, 1690 WVON.
Non-custodial fathers, we know you may need help to become better fathers. Tune in to WVON every Sunday at 2 p.m. for the Fathers, Families, Healthy Communities Forum. Saquon Lawrence and myself, Dr. Kirk Harris, will discuss the New Man Project, which is a lifting up of what works when it comes to rebuilding the black family.
Reimagining the role and image of black men and fathers and working toward a successful campaign for black male achievement. Non-custodial fathers, become a member. Work with other fathers in a safe space who are committed to being in the lives of their children in positive ways. Explore what it truly means to be a man and effective ways of co-parenting with the mother of your children. Commit to engaging in demand-side job training and access to jobs. Work towards establishing a cooperative relationship with child support services. Work to establish visitation and other ethical and legal arrangements to spend quality time with your children.
Fathers, call us at 312-252-0460, extension 120. Visit our website at www.ffhc.org or listen to the show on WVON every Sunday at 2 p.m. WVON is now on iHeartRadio. If you have a smartphone or tablet, download the iHeartRadio app and enjoy WVON wherever you are. This program is brought to you by Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities.
To be a good father is the most important job in a man's life, but it doesn't have to be hard.
Play catch. Go to a park or visit a zoo. Help your child with their homework. Sit down together for dinner. Ask them how their day was. Things get busy, and sometimes we all fall short. But the smallest moments can have the biggest impact on a child's life. Take time to be a dad today.
Learn more at 1-877-4DAD-411 or visit fatherhood.gov.
Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, you name it. Want to connect with WVON on all of our social media? We've made it simple. Just text SOCIAL to 88474, and the links will be on your phone in seconds. Standard text message rates apply.
Welcome back. Welcome back, WVOM, the New Man Project. This is Kirk Harris, and I'm here with Karen Norton-Reeds and my colleague Saquon Lawrence to continue our discussion about workforce issues in Chicago and the Cook County area. Today, we're going to change up a little bit. I'm going to be doing a little bit of interviewing with Saquon to talk with him about his experience, his unique experience, related to workforce issues within the community and the improvement in the quality of life, and particularly as it relates to advancing this notion of collective work and responsibility, leveraging strategic partnerships with anchor institutions within Chicago and Cook County area. And let me just say a little bit about Saquon, because I think it's important, even though he's been the, obviously we've been co-moderating the show for quite some time now, but let me give you a little context for his interest in this work. And Saquon is actually a Chicago Community Trust 2011 fellow. His fellowship was concerned with the efficacy of worker-owned co-ops as an entrepreneurial and workforce development model for low-income people. Saquon has traveled to Mondragon, Spain to study firsthand the historic Mondragon cooperatives incorporation, and also the Cleveland, Ohio. He's observed some groundbreaking work with the Evergreen Cooperative. Saquon is currently the director of Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities Demonstration Project, which you know focuses on issues that impact low-income, non-custodial fathers, and certainly is interested to understand how these strategies might apply to this population. Saquon has been an adjunct faculty member at the University of Illinois Circle campus and has had a long and illustrious career as an executive in the nonprofit sector, and is considered one of the premier workforce and community development practitioners in the city, if not in the country. And it's my pleasure to be working with him. He's also a founding board member of the Center for Workplace Democracy, a capacity building and technical assistance institution for the development of worker owner co-ops. So, Saquon, I want to start with a couple of questions around the Chicago Community Trust Fellowship experience that you had, and which allowed you to study these worker-owned co-ops in Spain and Africa and elsewhere, including the U.S. Mm-hmm. What are some of your core learnings from those sets of experiences, and what might you tell the audience about the promise and opportunity of those kinds of strategies here in Chicago?
Well, first, let's define work on a co-ops, because I'm not sure people really understand what they are. They are associations of persons united voluntarily to meet their common economic, social, and cultural needs and aspirations through jointly owned and democratically controlled enterprises, right, businesses. Mm-hmm. And these businesses are formed by a group of people who join forces and work together to solve a problem or reach a goal that they share, right? So in a cooperative, only members are committed to own common shares of equity, unlike the kind of investment structures that you see here. And all cooperatives are owned and governed democratically, mm-hmm. Applying the principle of one member, one vote. That's very important. In terms of what I learned, I learned that if you want to ensure that thousands of your people or our people are to build assets, if they're going to build assets and generate wealth, the best models that I've my research suggests are ones that demand that we do it collectively, right? That we build corporations together and share the profits collectively, right? So, and I learned that in free markets, that economies that are sustainable, even in a global recession, like in Europe, and in Spain, and particularly in Italy, in Greece, are those that are built around a value orientation based on shared power, shared responsibility, shared space, shared wealth, shared knowledge, and a shared vision. Mm-hmm. So the economies that I've seen that are doing, even in this global depression, and that's what it is globally. We talk about a recession in this country. When you go to Europe and other places, it's a depression. But in those economies, in those areas where you have really depressed economies, these businesses are doing very well, mm-hmm. right? And these communities are doing relatively well. And so economies that are effectively doing this are the Mondragon in Spain, right, which you referred to earlier, Kirk, Emilia Romagna in Italy, Arizmendi in California, and Evergreen in Cleveland, even though they just got they're just getting started. These are institutions or corporations where the, you know, like one of the things I always tell people when I talk about this, and because we don't have a lot of time, because this is a whole show, right? I mean, it's two shows, but they don't have middle management in the Mondragon, and they don't need middle management because the workers are so highly motivated, right, mm-hmm. to increase their market share, yeah. right? And it's because at the end of the year, the profits accrue back to the workers, right? So there's a salary that's commensurate with the market pays. And in addition to that, the profits at the end of the year, a percentage of the profits go back to the workers. So you imagine, so if you're making $50,000, $40,000 a year, right, and then at the end the company made, you know, $20 million in profits, and, you know, 10% of that or 20% of that is going back to you. So now in addition to your salary, now you have this other wealth that you're accumulating over years. So that's very attractive, as you right. can imagine, right?
Right.
And so that's what I learned. I learned that these they're places that are really doing well in spite of the economy that they find themselves in.
So let me ask you this other question, and you're proposing, and this may be relevant, by the way, mm-hmm. to the caller that I don't know that we're going to be able to take that June's call today, but mm-hmm. To the caller who says that there should be a law that helps ex-felons, and there should be more opportunity out there for people who may have barriers to employment. Maybe mm-hmm. you could talk a little bit about how this strategy might apply to said individuals and mm-hmm. what you think this strategy might do for a place like Chicago, and whether there's openings that mm-hmm. you envision in a place like Chicago for something like that to percolate up,
yeah.
if you will.
Well, I mean, Carrie may have something to say about this in our closing remarks, but I'm convinced, and this was my primary proposition to the trust when I got the fellow, right? I'm convinced that low-income African-Americans, particularly those without a GED or high school diploma or have criminal records, they're not going to get employed at scale. I don't believe they will. Now, there's those. This is an interesting debate. And there's no evidence that they will. Not at scale. You'll get some, but not, mm-hmm. not when you look at the numbers of returning citizens. Right, so I propose that these brothers and sisters build their own businesses. It was just that simple, but not another, someone came to me the other day and said, well, we got to get 5 new millionaires. That's going to be our benchmark in terms of our activity, our workforce development, and our advocacy work. I'm like, no, I don't want another Johnson Company. I don't want another Harpo. I don't want another Motel. I don't want, what we need is businesses that we own collectively, that we share in the responsibility of their success, and that we benefit from them collectively, right? You and I, Kirk, we could probably go out the next 5 years, and Karen and the three of us start a business, make money, and then we sell it to an Italian interest, right? Sell it to a French interest, right? And then move to Brazil or something, right? That's not going to help
right.
our community.
What happens to those workers if we do that?
Right.
Exactly.
Right. So anyway, I get passionate about that, but so that was my proposition to the trust. That is my argument primarily. Now, that doesn't mean that this is just for low-income and poor people. I'm arguing that this is for people who are self-determining,
right?
Right? And people who want to do for themselves, mm-hmm. speak for themselves, and define themselves, right? And really build businesses that are based on their values. And when you're in Spain and you study this, and these people are so proud, and their collective self-esteem and their ethos is so powerful because they're doing so well. It's based on this collective achievement of creating wealth as a community.
Right, but it's a fundamentally different social norm than what we do here in this country, right? So there, it's not a capitalist society. As a matter of fact, the area in Mondragon, sorry, the Spanish study thing is coming out, but that area is also a quasi-socialist area. And so their value from, you know, early on is around collective responsibility and collective impact. And so the studies around collective impact and collaboration are really just beginning to take hold for us here in this country, and we're really just starting to value it because we've typically been fighting over crumbs and seeing it as if you get something, then that means I don't get something, as opposed to if we get something together, we have an opportunity to build wealth and distribute that collectively.
Right, but here's the thing. So that's true, but they don't refer to themselves that way, right? They are really, they love the free market. They absolutely love the free market. It's because they're competing in the free market so effectively, right? And so they don't really talk about it kind of an ideological, from an ideological standpoint, but Karen is right. But just to give you some statistics, the cooperative movement right now is by far the most durable and most powerful grassroots movement in the world. Over 800 million people in 85 countries, right? That's 100 million jobs that are in worker-owner co-ops, right, worldwide, right? And so in Mondragon, for instance, they have 120 corporations, right? They have expanded outside the region that Karen just referred to, and they have 6 financial institutions, 14 retailers, right, 200 supermarkets.
Wow.
Right? They have 14 insurance companies. They have, like, right now, they, when we were there, they had like, they have like 3%, 4% unemployment, 3% unemployment, 8% now, when Spain is like 25, 30% unemployment. So the evidence is there, right? And this is what I'm arguing for. They have a network of 260 co-ops now, right? So it's just in $21 billion in profits annually.
Right. It is amazing.
Well, it is absolutely amazing. Well, let me talk about that, because and Karen, you have to forgive me for my lack of diction from Spanish diction from Mondragon. But let me just ask the question, and this is kind of tied to the question, the next question I want to ask. That is, you know, when we were in a Shore Bank neighborhood and institute, and we were working together in the 90s, this whole notion about, and we were working on this first, the first sectoral demand-driven model, and this whole notion about manufacturing, which the Mondragon obviously has captured in terms of building this value-added wealth engine, right?
Right.
And using that in a cooperative context. But we know that manufacturing is changing, that we're seeing kind of the exporting of manufacturing out of the U.S. We've seen some other kind of changes globally. What does your experience tell you? How do these things affect your thinking about manufacturing as a target sector today? And what do you see as some of the opportunities embedded in manufacturing? Because we know that the manufacturing has really turned high tech these days.
Yeah.
But what are the implications for that in terms of the strategies you might be thinking about?
Yeah, but it goes back to something Karen said. We got to train, right? And we have to train hard, and we have to be aggressive. Because a lot of the people that we serve, that we care deeply about, and we care about our whole community, but the people we care deeply about too are those in poverty, right? And those who don't have the sufficient skill sets, and so we've got to enlist them in this project. Now, we're arguing that engineers, MBAs, scientists of all various fields need to come together, right? And in the same kind of process that they did in Mondragon, the same thing they did in Arizmendi, the same thing they did in Evergreen. Mm-hmm. And by the way, in Evergreen, so they have, right, they have the cooperative laundry, they have Ohio Solar Cooperative, right? So that's they're doing some manufacturing there. Or they're taking advantage of manufacturing processes, right? They have the City Green Growers Cooperative. When you go, they have a huge what do you call a greenhouse, right? Mm-hmm. So they're making, what is it, Karen? I think it's cabbage, and I forget what it is.
Do they also have the fishery like they have in Wisconsin?
Right. So they have these production processes. But I think what we've got to do, because I think in terms of green technology, I think in terms of advanced manufacturing, nanotechnology, biochemical, it is advanced, right? I stay on top of this stuff, and it is 21st century technology. We've got to embrace that. We've got to train. I like what I saw in Detroit when we was at Shore Bank, and it influenced my thinking. Focus Hope was the name of that institution, and very, very quickly. And this is what Bill Strickland is seeking to do or does in Pittsburgh, is where you have the community-based organization identify and recruit the folks, right? And there's a strategic partnership between the three car manufacturers and the University of Michigan, similar to what Karen is talking about, right? So, and I know that the City of College's College to Careers initiative is doing this. And so the three car manufacturers work with the University of Michigan, develop the curriculum. They invested in it, built out the plant floor for the training. They get their GED. They train them on the skill sets they need to go into the plant floor, to go on the plant floor and be successful. And that's how it worked, right? And so it was a win-win for everybody. The manufacturers, you could see why the car manufacturer wanted to do it. They had skills gap. The University of Michigan was in the business of educating people. And Focus Hope, the community-based organization, was really trying to figure out a way to get their folks hired. So it was a strategic collaboration. It was a win-win, and it's beautiful, and it influenced my thinking when I got back from Detroit.
And so what Saquon is pointing out is what we know works in workforce development. I call it the triad. You've got an employer that's in need. Mm-hmm. You've got a training partner that has the ability to give people the skills that they need to satisfy that employer's need. And you've got a workforce development agency that understands supportive services, that understands case management, and that's going to be there to help shepherd that individual through the process from beginning to end.
Right.
That's how it works. Mm-hmm. And we've got lots of examples of that happening in sort of small pockets all throughout this region. What we really are looking toward is a more concentrated effort. And I think that requires leadership in all three of those areas to be able to get us there. What do you think, Saquon?
No, I think that's right. I don't have anything to add to that. This is exactly what we need to do. And to June, the caller, I don't want to gloss over her question because it's key. Starting businesses is what I'm advocating for, but you can. There are sectors, and manufacturing is one of them. In fact, when you talk to JARC, right, they are placing folks who are coming out of prison and they're making money.
Right.
And she can call, and another, I hope she got the information that Karen gave. She can go to one of the work centers and she can get that information.
She was actually calling from Boston, Massachusetts.
Oh, wow. Well,
yeah, but I think it's generally.
There's a workforce board in Boston.
Right. Well, let me say this. This has been an absolutely fabulous conversation. And as a practitioner and an academic myself, we know that the theory doesn't always meet the practice. That's part of the challenge that you are describing, that we need some leadership in this area to get this moving. So my question is, what are some of the fundamental recommendations, and maybe both you and Karen can talk about this, Saquon, what are some of the fundamental recommendations that might get Chicago positioned and to do this at scale, if you will?
Well, I think that I'll talk about work on the co-ops. And I think the anchor institutions is the way to go. I mean, Michael Porter's done work on this. I think they're doing it in Cleveland. We have an opportunity to do this on the west side with the University of Illinois, Sinai, Rush, and do that in the community of North Lawndale. I know that Bill Strickland and the Manchester Beerwill Corporation, I just visited them a couple of weeks ago. They're really interested in doing that kind of work on the west side. But the most important aspect of this work is on the front end, right? Educating communities about the possibilities, the evidence, the stuff I just laid out, and really posing this question, do you want to own or do you want to work for people, right? And when we ask that question, most people, not all, but most of them say, I want to own my own business, right? And so Karen talks about this ideological thing around capitalism and socialism. Mm-hmm. And really, I can tell you, people don't think like that. They like, I want to take care of my family, right? And this idea of having some responsibility and some power around, you know, the way I work, how I work, what we produce. You know, are we poisoning the environment, right?
Right.
And workers saying, no, that's inconsistent with my value. So our production processes are going to be very different. That's really appealing to people. So we've got to get people in a place, a safe space, where they can have this conversation, have these debates, and emerge out of it. And then the technical assistance and I think that the support for that will flow. But the most fundamental aspect of this is, and the same thing in Spain, same thing in Italy, same thing in Cleveland, is you got to get people together and get so that those conversations around the values, the bylaws, you know, how you're going to work together. And once you do that, I think the rest of it is
and let me just repeat. Thank you, Saquon. Let me just repeat this information. It's if you're interested in getting more connected to the workforce issues in Chicago and Cook County, please go to workforceboard.org. That's all one word. And you can also dial the telephone number 312-603-0200. That's the workforceboard.org. That's the website. And you can also call the number 312-603-0200. So, Karen, do you have any comments or in terms of recommendations as we kind of close out the show?
So the one thing I wanted to say is that the work that Saquon was able to do through the trust is fascinating, and it's really exciting to be able to have those opportunities here. Bill Strickland is actually coming to town next week.
Yeah, you and I will be with him.
And we will be with him. And there has actually already been some meetings held around really figuring out where it makes sense to do these cooperatives here within the city and the county, quite frankly. And so I just look forward to continuing to work with you on these issues. With respect to just generally workforce development, I think that the partnership is doing quite a bit to broaden the impact that we're able to have. I would just have to reiterate that we need funding and we need more businesses engaged and willing to hire people directly from the public workforce system and really utilize our services as a pipeline.
Okay. Great. Well, I know before we do anything else, I want to thank our funders, the Chicago Community Trust and Open Society Foundation and the Woods Fund of Chicago. And also want to give a quick shout out to some of our partners, Felix Family Services, Safer Foundation, North Lawndale Employment Network, Center for New Horizons, Chicago Urban League, the Metropolitan Family Services, Jane Addams Resource Corporation, Chicago Job Council, City Colleges of Chicago, Chicago Housing Authority, and the Illinois Department of Child Support Services, Shriver Center, and Cabrini-Green Legal Aid. So this has been fantastic. Thanks, Kirk, for interviewing me.
Well, thank you, brother, for your insights and knowledge. And you know, one of the critical things that I think we understand about what's transpiring in our communities is we can't do for ourselves, we can't do it for our families, and unless we've got solid jobs and we've got opportunities in that regard. So please, if you have any further information that you need, please go to the workforceboard.org, 312-603-0200. This program is brought to you by FFHC, Fathers, Families, and Healthy Communities. You can call us at 312-252-0460, extension 120, or visit our website at www.ffhc.org or listen to us on WVON every Sunday at 2 p.m. And we'd like to just like to thank Karen Norton Reed for being with us this afternoon. And we want to say thank you to Alex. He was also in the studio with us this afternoon. And, of course, my brother and co-moderator, Saquon Lawrence. And with that, peace.
Yeah.